Welcome to another edition of the Superflate Podcast, your Glenn Ligon of NBA podcasts, because neon is just cool, man. I have no other reason. What's up, everybody? It's your host, Joe Borelli, coming at you from my studio in Brooklyn, New York. It is Thursday, May 31st, 2018, and there is so much to talk about. Holy God. I'm chomping at the bit here. How are you guys? Good. First of all, welcome to the 100th episode of the Superflight. I never thought I would make it this far, really. And I couldn't have done it without all of you because you made me popular enough that I got onto a network, the Almighty Baller Network, and the Almighty Baller Network pays for me to be on the internet. So, not really pays, but it's basically hosting for me. So, without you guys, I would never have been able to do this. I would still be paying out of pocket to be hosting shit on the internet, which gets expensive after a while, and I probably would have quit long ago. So thank you all for listening. Even like I want to thank every person individually, all 11 of you, but I don't know your names. So thank you guys and gals. I really appreciate you. You've been great. Thank you for interacting with me. Thank you for coming along for the ride and 100 episodes. Woohoo! This doesn't mean shit. I could be gone tomorrow. It's not true. I'll be around for a while. Anyway, ways to get in touch with the show. You can, by the way, that is my entire 100th episode celebration. Well, that and this. Because I couldn't think of another thing to do. You're welcome. Anyway, happy 100th episode. Ways to get in touch with the show. You can tweet at me personally at Joe Borelli on Twitter. You can tweet at the Superflate Podcast at Superflate Pod. You can follow along on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Music, iTunes, and anywhere you can find podcasts, the Almighty Baller Network. And you can please, if you go on iTunes, please, 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 I'm begging you, rate and review, because I know there's plenty of you out there that listen and enjoy the show. And if you help me climb the rankings, I swear to God, I'll get good people on here and I'll be more well-versed in my critiques of the NBA and give you more thoughtful and insightful information. Anyway, that's probably all a lie, but I'll try. I swear to God, I'll try. I'm really good at trying. I never succeed, but I try like a motherfucker. So that's that. What else? I don't know, man. Like, this is like, I mean, A, my birthday is coming up, but this week, last couple days has been like my birthday. It's insane what's happening with Colangelo. I'm not gonna talk about that right now. There's too much. And James Herbert from CBS Sports is actually going to grace me with his presence once again and come on the show and talk about all of this craziness and a little bit about the finals that start tonight. So you guys will have something to listen to tomorrow. And I know like everyone has gotten into this Colangelo thing right now, and I honestly can't get enough. So you know what? I feel if I can't get enough, you guys probably can't get enough either, and you'll probably just enjoy listening. It's going to be fun. So before we get into all that, let me see. I should just tell you guys a story, because listen, this is what I do for 100 episodes. Well, actually for about, what's 100 minus 18? It's somewhere around 82 episodes. For about 82 episodes, I've been giving you guys a little glimpse into the life of me, which is so completely enthralling, I'm sure. It's a very ordinary, very bland, very boring life, but I like to regale you with my crazy stories. They're not crazy, they're just stupid, of life in New York City. So this past week, it was Memorial Day, and happy Memorial Day to everyone. I hope you all had a good week and weekend, an extended holiday weekend. I really needed it, and I'm sure you did too. It was really crappy in New York, except for Saturday. Saturday was unbelievably beautiful. So my wife and I got out the bicycles. We swooped them up. I cleaned them off. Gave him some oil, a little TLC. We got on the bicycles and we rode to Rockaway Beach. We didn't go to the beach, mind you. I mean, we went to the beach. We went to the boardwalk. We rode all the way down. It was like an 11, 12 mile ride one way. It was fun. It was great. It was an exciting ride. There was the great thing about New York in the summertime, or especially on holidays, is like there is no one here because everyone leaves. It's kind of incredible. The city becomes sort of a ghost town, and it's just the most amazing time to be a New Yorker. I love it. So we got the bikes out, and we rode down to Rockaway Beach, down to Far Rockaway. We first got in at, I think it was Jacob Reese, and then rode the boardwalk all the way down. They did a marvelous job of fixing up the boardwalk after Sandy. And really nice day. It was a beautiful day. I forgot to wear sunscreen on my arms, so I got my arms all burnt, but they look great now, except for they're starting to peel a little. It was a really nice day. We got down there. We had some lunch, and we were about to get our bikes to ride back. But man, like, if you haven't ridden a bicycle in a long time and you're wearing like regular clothes, not anything with a pad in the butt, and your bicycle is just like a fixie, a single speed. Mine's not a fixie, but it's a single speed, and it's got the very thin seat that you really have to work your butt muscles up to in order to, like, let's call it butt calluses. You have to get some butt calluses going, right? In order to sustain long periods of riding. So neither one of us had really any butt calluses. I mean, it's not actually calluses. That sounds gross. But you get used to doing riding your bicycle. I used to ride to work and back every day. I would ride 14 miles a day to work and back. So riding long distances did not bother me in the least. I haven't really ridden that much in years now. So we were about to get on our bikes and ride back. We got on, we rode about two blocks, and we both were like, oh my God, my ass is going to fall off. Let's take the train. And I am one of those guys that I get so annoyed with people bringing their bicycles onto the train, because, like, you have a perfectly good means of transportation. Why aren't you on it? This is the first time in my entire life as a New Yorker that I've actually taken a bicycle onto the train. And it was fine because there weren't that many people there. And, you know, during rush hour, you're not actually allowed to take your bike on the train. But off hours, it's fine. We were trying to come back from Rockaway. We got on the train with our bikes. And about halfway through, I realized and I started feeling really bad why I never take my bike on the train. There, we took up like an entire section of seats, the two of us. We had our bikes, even though we had them like stacked on top of each other, like as close as we could get them to the seat. We're still sectioning off a whole row of seats that no one can sit down. So this mother gets on with her child. There's nowhere for her to sit because we're a couple of assholes. It would have been way more room taken up if we had gotten up and moved our bikes. And just getting out of the spot would have been like, you know, an ordeal. So it wasn't like really, I felt bad, but we were almost kind of trapped in our seats. Then an elderly person gets on and they're standing there like, a woman with a broken arm gets on. Luckily, a guy next to us moved himself so she could sit down. I was like, man, I feel like such a jerk. I'm a perfectly capable bodied person with a bicycle on a train and blocking people from sitting down. I felt horrible. I will not take my bike on the train again. But the reason we did all this is because if you live in New York and you're trying to get out for a holiday weekend, you should never, ever wait till the last second to plan a trip. We really wanted to go up to, like, where is the place? We wanted to go upstate. We wanted to go up into the Catskills for the weekend. And unfortunately, we were really busy, didn't have time to plan this out. I tried to get train tickets. This is a crazy phenomenon. I've never heard of this before. I tried to get train tickets to get out of Manhattan, or even, you know, anywhere in the city. You have to leave from Manhattan. But I tried to get train tickets to get upstate. And every single Amtrak train was sold out for two freaking days. I didn't even know that was possible. And then we looked into renting a car, which would have been $600 for the weekend. And it just was not worth it. So we enjoyed a nice weekend here at home in the city. Saturday was glorious. It was beautiful. We had a really wonderful time together. Sunday, rain, cold. Monday, rain, cold. Every day since, except for yesterday, it's been really crappy and rainy and cold. That's what I get. Anyway, that was not a very good story, but it's the one that you're getting. So I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed the 100th episode story. I hope you enjoyed the 100th episode guitar lick. I hope you enjoyed everything about the 100th episode. Cherish it, because it only happens once. So coming up shortly is James Herbert from CBS Sports. I may have mentioned this already. One of my favorite new people. And we're going to talk about the playoffs. Unbelievably, we're actually going to talk about the finals, what it all means, And then after that, brief conversation, we're going to talk all about the Sixers and Colangelo because I can't get enough. All right. After this, we'll be right back. I don't want to miss a second of this. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm all right. There's so much to talk about. Are you popping a beer right now?
It's a Tangerine LaCroix.
Oh, nice. Damn it. I was about to have like beer anxiety. I was going to be like, I need to have a beer too.
Get yourself a seltzer, sir.
Oh, seltzer, schmelzer. How have your last few days been, my friend?
My last few days have been relatively boring compared to the 10 days that preceded them. I was on the road for games 2 through 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, which I've never traveled that much before for work. So that was fun and weird and interesting. And I did a lot of like TV stuff and did writing when I could. And yeah,
awesome.
Got to see LeBron play just ridiculous basketball.
As he always does, right?
Generally, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's all right.
Yeah, he's okay. He's okay. You know, I always imagine that like traveling for work like that, like for the games, is probably just completely exhausting. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, I'm still sort of out of it like a few days later.
That's crazy. Like I mean, I don't travel for work anymore. I used to drive over the road a little bit. In a former life, and just doing that like is exhausting. I can't imagine traveling for the NBA games. In one respect, I envy the hell out of you. It sounds like
once you're there and the games are happening, you're just feeling great.
Yeah,
it's just like the early flights and all that crap. Like, I'm not gonna complain about that life. Like, that would be ridiculous. I'm not gonna do that. But I will say, like, you are correct in that it is exhausting. You get the adrenaline when you're there at the arena and it's a crazy playoff atmosphere and all that stuff. But yeah.
And you're in like, what are you at the press box or where were you at?
Yeah, at in Boston it is sort of like a press box. Like, you're up on like the 9th level.
Mm-hmm.
In Cleveland it's a little different. You're like near the back of the 100 level, like behind the basket.
Mm.
But in some ways, I actually prefer the view.
Yeah.
At the TD Garden, because you're sort of like lording down over the court and you can see plays develop a little better. Like, sometimes when you're in Cleveland, like if somebody's like at the top of the key running a play, like at the basket closest to you, like you can't actually see the ball. Like, you'll end up looking at the I believe they call it the Humongatron at the queue.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a good name for it.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's big enough that the Humongatron works as a name.
Oh, by the way, James Herbert, welcome to the Superflight.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks for coming on again. Quick, tell everybody where they can find you, as if anyone doesn't already know.
At CBSSports.com in the NBA section, and at Outside the NBA on Twitter.
Nice. Thanks again for gracing me with your presence. It's, by the way, it's my 100th episode, so I couldn't think of a better person to do this with. Thank you.
I'm honored. Thank you.
You shouldn't be honored. I'm just a schlub.
It's the 100th episode. I'm allowed to be honored.
All right. Fair
Jesus.
Enough. Fine. Be honored. So do you want to talk about, do you actually want to talk about like basketball, or do you want to talk about like what's going on with the Sixers and Colangelo in Philadelphia?
I mean, whatever you want, but I will say I think the Colangelo stuff is more interesting than the finals.
Let's talk about that real quick. I totally agree. I am not looking for, I mean, it's not like I'm happy on one hand to still get to watch a bit of basketball because, you know, it always ends a little bit too soon and yet never soon enough. So I'm still excited to see LeBron James play. I'm still excited to see Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and, you know, all the guys play. But the funny thing is, I'm only excited to see LeBron play on the Cavs, as I think we all are. I mean, there's a little bit of intrigue in it, right? In that there's this really tiny little glimmer of hope that LeBron could possibly, maybe by the skin of his teeth, win this series. But it's not really going to happen. So what we have instead is a juggernaut in the Warriors and the Cavs, who are basically just have LeBron. I don't know. And it's the fourth time in the row. I think we're all a little bit exhausted. How do you feel about the series?
I mean, yeah, I don't feel much about this series, honestly. Like, I'm going to watch all the games. I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to write about it. I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to do all the stuff I normally do. But I'd be lying. I'd be, like, I wouldn't be being genuine if I was to say I was, like, super stoked about this. I was hoping at least one of the teams would be different. I'm not. Like, I'm impressed with what the Cavs team has done. There were a lot of times where I thought their season was just going to go off the rails. I definitely, going into game seven, I was asked to make like an official prediction, like on air, about what happened. And I basically didn't want to make one because I didn't want to bet against LeBron.
Right.
But then like when walking around the arena and just like talking to other media people, like I was like, yeah, I feel like the Celtics have got this. And like a lot of people were saying that. And early in the game, it looked like the Celtics would have it. And the Cavs just weren't really finding any sort of rhythm. It was an ugly game. And then the Celtics just kind of fell apart and missed a million jumpers. And now the Cavs are here. And it's kind of incredible when you look at the roster beyond LeBron. And I think looking at this now, it's like, all right, well, we could think back to like 2015 when Kyrie and Love were out and they played that like sort of dinosaur ball.
Mm-hmm.
And like maybe they can try some version of that again. But like the Warriors didn't have Kevin Durant then.
Right.
Like I'm not interested in people like whining about it and saying how like this is so bad for basketball, blah, blah, blah. Like if that's your opinion, I'm just like, all right, so don't watch them. That's fine.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm also like not psyched to talk about, oh, yeah, like LeBron James is going to hunt Stephen Curry in pick and rolls and they're going to be physical with him off the ball. And like the Warriors are going to try to play Kevin Love off the floor and blah, blah. Like this is stuff we've talked about the past 4 years.
Right.
So like there's not much new from a strategic perspective unless you want to talk about how important George Hill is or like what can Jeff Green bring. Like I don't we can have those discussions if you like, but I'm just saying like this is not nearly as interesting as say Boston Golden State would be, even though I wouldn't give the Celtics that much of a chance of beating them either. It would just be something new.
Right. Exactly. And it is actually kind of telling that like one of the biggest stories going into the series is Jeff Green's heart surgery that happened, what, 6 years ago, 4 years ago? Like,
yeah. Cause LeBron keeps talking about it.
Yeah. Right. And now the biggest thing tonight is LeBron's shorts suit, which I just saw on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, like, there's not that much intrigue. It's the sad thing for me is that, like, right, of course, I'm going to get to watch it. We're all going to watch it. We're going to, you know, if you think it's bad for basketball, hey, that's just a silly take. Don't watch it. You're exactly correct. Would I have wanted to see something else? Abso-fucking-lutely. But
yeah,
this is not what we got. So this is what we have. So let's go with it. And, you know, I'm going to be happy when the series is over. I honestly think it's going to go. I know everyone's picking five. That seems pretty realistic to me. I mean, I honestly think they would sweep except for that it's LeBron. And I don't even think it's a matter of LeBron being able to beat the Warriors. I think it's a matter of they're going to show him some respect and be like, we're at his home. He's one of the greatest players of all time. Let's just let him have one. I mean, maybe that's
like a true gentleman sweep.
It truly,
like,
yes.
Yeah. Like literally them just being gentlemanly about it. No, I think part of it is also like, the Warriors haven't shown us that we should trust them to play with focus and like discipline every game, right? Like,
oh, of course.
And if they're just throwing the ball away carelessly, like the Cavs are the type of team, like if LeBron gets going on a fast break, like that's trouble and they get open threes that way. So I do think the Warriors at least have to like play somewhat smart basketball and take care of the ball. Like they don't have to do it through every quarter of every game. Like they're talented enough to overcome that against this team, but you could see one game where it's just like the whole time they're just sloppy and then the Cavs win that game. That wouldn't shock me. Wouldn't even shock me if it happened twice. I picked Warriors in five, like just about everybody did.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if it went four, it wouldn't shock me. If it went six, it wouldn't shock me.
You know, and there's the only real intrigue in this series, right? If the Cavs somehow pull this off, which is what we should all be rooting for, right? If you want to see, I mean, can you imagine how great that would be if LeBron brought this team, this garbage? I mean, I don't want to call human beings garbage, but like as a team, like they're not very good, right? So if he brought this really inferior team and won the championship with them, that would be incredible. He would cement his legacy. Like you would have to say at that point, right, that he's better than Michael Jordan. Is that not the case? Don't you think?
I mean, I've thought that for a few years now. I'm just like sort of careful about like in what context I express that opinion because people get mad at you.
Yeah, they do.
But yeah, no, I mean, I think this this might already be the most impressive playoff run anyone's ever had in what LeBron is doing right now. And one thing I'm interested in is just like how much longer can he keep up playing pretty much the whole game? And yeah. still looking somewhat fresh at the end of it, because like his workload is like something I've never seen before. The closest was probably himself 3 years ago, but I think this is better because mm-hmm. he's doing it with more efficiency this time. And in a lot of these games, he's had to go really hard on defense too. Like that was the thing in the Boston series. Like it hasn't been that way the entire playoffs. You've seen him like, especially some of those games against Indiana where he just like wasn't really playing on defense. Like in Boston, he was like locked in for the most part. So I'm looking at this and I'm just like, he is still human at some point. Like, I know we keep talking about him, like Tristan Thompson made the joke about like him being a machine and like machines don't get tired. They just get an oil change or like whatever it is he said. And like, I get
it. I didn't even see it.
But like, yeah. Yeah. But like, he is a person. Like I've seen him in the locker rooms after these games, like icing himself down and looking exhausted.
Yeah.
Like I don't know how many more games he can keep doing this. And the degree of difficulty level is just higher and higher, right? Because yeah. this Warriors team is going, like, he might end up having to guard Kevin Durant for, like, large chunks of these games. And offensively, like, yeah, the Celtics were great on defense and he had to work pretty hard. Well, the Warriors, at least when they have their best five players out there, like, they're incredible at defense too. And it's just, I don't know what we should even be expecting from him anymore. Like it's really gotten to this point where he drops these like 45-point, 15-rebound, 9-assist games, mm-hmm. and we're just like, all right, yeah, that's LeBron. That's yeah. what he's supposed to do. and I like we go in, anytime that they're in an elimination game scenario, you just assume he's going to play the entire game, and he's going to do everything perfectly, and the other team just has to deal with that. And it's just taken as a given. Like that should not be a given for anyone. Like this is ludicrous.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I saw you tweeted out the other night when I guess it was game 7 against Boston. Ty Lue was like, I'm not going to play LeBron the whole game unless I have to play LeBron the whole game, right?
And then he did.
And he played him the entire game. I was like, translation, he's playing the whole damn game.
Yeah.
And he did. Exactly. Yeah. Like, if he's the only thing you can't give LeBron a rest. So it's crazy that he's able to do this. I know we keep saying in his 15th season, he's 33 years old.
He's played 100 games this year and it's all this stuff.
It's yeah. insanity. And at some point, like I'm actually starting to think like at this point, what is he stressing his body so much that he's actually going to get injured? Because he's been an Iron
Man. He already did. He got injured in game 6 and he just kept on going.
He's like, merely a flesh wound.
And people keep asking about it and he refuses to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like more power to him. I really hope. I mean, I hope, you know, the fan in me hopes that he makes this series and that the Cavs really step up and give him something because they need to be competitive at all. Ultimately, I think it's just going to be, you know, the series that we're all expecting. It's depressing because everyone has called this series from the beginning of the season, the beginning of last season, the beginning of the season before that. And we just keep getting this rerun, which is it's kind of sad, but I'll watch it. I'm still into basketball. But aside of all this, the thing that I'm really excited to talk to you about, the thing that I'm chomping at the bit to talk to you about, they're the greatest distraction in the history of the NBA. Am I hyping this up too much? Brian Colangelo, and I think at this point, everyone has probably listened to enough podcasts and read the article from Ben Dietrich on The Ringer and knows exactly what's going on with Brian Colangelo and his 4 burner accounts. There was one that's actually confirmed his. This is the most fascinating, hilarious, depressing, aggravating, depressing. Did I say depressing already? It's an incredible, incredible story that I cannot stop watching. And I can't stop hearing enough about it. Like I was thinking, oh my God, I'm going to put this podcast out 2 days late. But then I realized I'm still trying to find every podcast that I can listen to that is dealing with it, right? It's crazy. How many podcasts have you been on this week so far?
I haven't been. I've just been listening to them.
All right, good.
I've listened to like 5 different podcasts where like that's the sole topic.
Yeah. So now you're ready to go. So give me your thoughts.
My thoughts, like it is at once, hilarious and very serious, like completely frivolous and almost harmless, and then at the same time, like, rule violating, like affects players' mm-hmm. careers. It shows like this deep insecurity of a man, even if he's not the one doing this. And we should like be pretty clear about the way that we talk about this. Like, we're not acting as if this was BC tweeting.
Right. Well, listen, you can be cautious about it. I have nothing to lose. So go ahead.
Okay. But do you even think it was him? Like, as well, honestly, like from what's come out in the past 24, 25 hours or so, like a lot of this is pointing right at his wife.
Right. Exactly.
And like the question of like whether, if it was her, the question of whether or not he had knowledge of it. The question of how involved he was in this, mm-hmm. like that is still very much up in the air. But I mean, I think the way Dietrich has described it when he is given in subsequent interviews, and I think it's even put it this way in the story, is like, there's like a Venn diagram of people who are interested in this Philadelphia 76ers, obsessed with the Toronto Raptors and how Masai Ujiri is perceived, that are interested in University of Chicago basketball. Mm-hmm. And then like Toronto sort of like high class Toronto private high schools. And like there aren't a ton of people who are in this group. And I don't know if it is Barbara Bettini, as everybody is saying, but if it's not her, like it still has to be someone like in their inner circle. It has to be someone extremely close. And the fact that like they were in enough to know like deep insider information from like Sixers management's perspective, like that is really troubling if you are a fan of the Sixers. I think that has to be troubling if you're Sixers ownership. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, even if he keeps denying this, like apparently a reporter just saw him like at the airport today coming back into Philly, and he just stuck to his line of like, I have no knowledge of these tweets, blah, blah, blah. Like, even if he didn't know, like, I think at a certain point you're guilty by association and you are responsible for this sort of breach of information, breach of trust and all of that crap.
Yeah. What is it? HIPAA violations, all of that. If you release confidential medical information, like whether or not it was actually his fingers that tweeted it, if he told his wife, and let's just assume it was his wife that tweeted this stuff out, because to answer your question first, do I think he actually did it? You know, the funny thing is, when I first read the article and I read these things, and I thought about how I perceive, like, this is just how I perceive Brian Colangelo, right? Mm-hmm. From everything I've heard, from every time I've heard him talk, from every article I've read, he consistently has shown that he's very insecure and an egomaniac. He's constantly thrown his best players under the bus. Think about the first, when he was first hired in Philadelphia, he went on Derek Bodner's podcast and he talked about Chris Bosh not being the guy. Chris Bosh was not a superstar. That's why they couldn't get over the hump. From that second on, I was like, oh my God, this guy is just so incredibly insecure and such an egomaniac. I'm like, so when I first read that article, I was like, this makes absolute sense. I could totally see this coming out of his mouth. I mean, have you ever met the man? I'm sure you've been around him before.
Yeah, I have. I mean, I don't
know. And I'm not going to ask you for your opinion. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure you don't, you know, I don't want to put you in an awkward position for sure.
I don't know.
But from things I've heard, like, people have opinions about, like, how he is incredibly sensitive about these things. And of course, like, if you're, I could never do that job. I would crumble like a week-old cookie, right? Like, I am mm-hmm. so easily triggered and so fragile. I'm almost crying right now talking to you because I'm so excited. I'm just kidding.
I'm crying too.
Good.
We're both near tears here.
Near tears. I understand being sensitive to things, but man, you cannot do that, right? Like, you can't go out. When the Fultz thing happened, he threw Fultz under the bus. When he was let go from Toronto, he threw Bosch under the bus. Like, everything I've read about him and everything I've heard him say, I'm just like, of course, this makes absolute sense. So I'm thinking, yeah, this makes perfect sense that he did this. He has all these burner accounts. The one thing that didn't make sense to me was that, how in the fuck does he have time to have 5 burner accounts? I'm like, where are you supposed to be GMing a team? So that was
And they weren't all created at the same time. It was like at different points, like when something sort of controversial was happening with the Sixers, like another one would pop up.
Right, right. So like, so I thought, okay, maybe that's him. It's crazy. And the things that he said, the information that he leaked, So now we think, you know, like Sixers Twitter, like, I don't know how much you trust Sixers Twitter. I feel like you probably do a fair bit since, you know, you did the whole rights to Ricky Sanchez profile and everything. They went and immediately figured out this is probably his wife doing some sleuthing. I would have never figured out the, like, trying to change somebody else's password. This has me so insecure. Now I'm like, oh my God, what did I tweet out like years ago that like, somebody's going to go back right. and find my yeah. stuff?
No, it's funny because some people have been giving Dietrich shit, like, why didn't he do all this legwork that the Sixers fans did? And it's like, well, I think it's pretty simple. Like, if he starts trying to, like, send password reset requests to mm-hmm. these accounts, I mean, there's immediately going to be, like, alarm bells ringing, like, what is going on here? Maybe we should shut down these accounts. Like,
yeah, exactly.
All of that stuff. Like, I think he had to be really careful with, like, who he talked to about it, what he was doing. And the Sixers fans did not have any of that stuff to worry about. Like, as soon as this was out there, it was just like, it's all right, it's go time. Let's find whatever we can. And I think it's amazing that they pulled up like that, those like Discus accounts that they had, that they found of like comments on blogs from the past few years that mm-hmm. may or may not belong to BC's wife. And yeah, I mean, there's just been some like really crazy sleuthing going on, and I've been following it as intensely as you have, maybe more. Yeah. Like, been all that I've been reading in the past few days. I think, you know, to also go off what you were saying about just your impressions of BC, like my perspective, having like I lived in Toronto for his entire tenure. For a lot of that tenure, I wasn't doing this job yet. For some of it, I was. And I always found him as a guy that was like extremely defensive of his moves mm-hmm. and was always very keenly aware of everything anybody was saying, whether it was writers, whether it was fans. He would address some of the criticisms unprompted when he was talking, and he'd often give these like long, winding 10-minute answers to pretty simple questions to the point where, like, I just remember going to his press conferences, and like we would split up the transcribing among the reporters that were there. And it was always such a chore. Like, all right, you take the first like 12 minutes and like this like 50-minute thing. And it's like he was like a master of saying a lot and revealing only exactly what he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes his flaw was that he was too honest. Sometimes he would, like, I remember him like going on air during a Raptors game and talking about how he was in talks to try to trade Andrea Bargnani, how moving him might be best for both sides, but they just haven't been able to figure out a deal yet. And it was like, like, you didn't have to, I mean, everybody knew that anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you didn't have to say it. And there were a few different instances like that. I think there's a really good story, I think 2 days ago now, that Bruce Arthur wrote in the Toronto Star that was kind of giving like the Toronto reporter's perspective. And he was talking about how everybody knew that Colangelo would read everything that was written, but he wouldn't just read the articles. He would go and read the comments.
Oh,
and
man.
Like people knew that he had a Google alert set up on his own name. I know of instances where he would email writers after, whether it was like a player that they criticized who just had a milestone or a big game, and said like, hey, you should like apologize for all the bad stuff you said about him. Or whether it was just like responding directly to something that was written. Like, he had no problem going out and defending himself directly or indirectly. And there was always a sort of sense of like, he had to get his word out there. He had to Right. get his spin out there. And I think it's an interesting contrast when you think about Sam Hinkie in particular, who was just straight mocked by a lot of people
mm-hmm.
and was just took the tack of like, well, if you're going to do something risky, if you're going to do something different, that comes with it. And I'm just going to shut up and I hope they underestimate me.
And they did.
And they absolutely did. And he turned out to be right about a lot of things. And I think it's just a really interesting contrast in personalities. Like, they really could not be any more different people.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why a lot of people did believe it right away, even if it turns out that he had nothing to do with this, even if it turned out that he had no knowledge of what was going on, I think a lot of what was said, as several reporters, including Woj, have pointed out, it jives with what he has said off the record to people.
Mm-hmm.
It matches what Philadelphia has tried to say to reporters in like sort of not direct quotable ways. And it sort of he has the personality that it's actually believable for some people. I think most of us didn't think he'd be this reckless, and it may very well turn out that he wasn't this reckless and that this wasn't him.
But, see,
but I think in terms of like the views expressed therein, that it does not surprise me if he thinks that he has gotten the short end of the stick in terms of his perception in Philly, his perception still in Toronto, and holds all these views, that would not surprise me one bit.
Right. But, you know, even to that, well, there's a lot to unpack there. First of all, to answer the last thing first, he, even if he didn't type the things directly with his own hands, he was still really reckless with the information, right? You can't, even if it's his wife, it's his confidant, I get that. You listen, I say things to my wife that I would never want uttered ever. But I would also say to my wife, if you ever repeat this, we are going to have a huge problem, right?
Exactly. Like, it's he's not livelihood. An FBI agent. He doesn't have to keep everything a secret.
Right.
But there has to be some sort of understanding that if he is complaining about Jahlil Okafor not passing a physical and a trade being rescinded, and this is not public information, that it remains not public information.
Right, right. And the thing is that, like, within 15 minutes of Ben Dietrich, let me get back to the other point real quick. You said that all these Sixers fans are burying Ben Dietrich now a little bit, or people are giving Ben Dietrich shit.
I don't know who the Sixers fans are, but I've seen other people sort of give him some shit.
Let's not forget that none of this sleuthing that people are doing on Twitter would even be possible if he hadn't done all the legwork to begin with.
Yeah.
So there's that. That's my defense of Ben Dietrich. I think he's a god right now. So
I think he uncovered the most amazing story of the season.
It's incredible. The thing is, even if Colangelo didn't type the things with his own hands, he still was reckless with the information. We know that, like, it's very believable that he would do this because, you know, everyone sees his character from afar or from up close in your case. Like, it's believable. It's totally believable. And if it's not him directly, like, he gave so much information. The thing that's really damning, too, is that within 15 minutes, is what I was saying, of Ben Dietrich calling the office and saying, listen, we've noticed these two accounts. And we've, you know, been told that Colangelo is operating these. Can you confirm? Within 15 minutes of that, the other three accounts were shut down, right? They were turned into private accounts. So if he didn't know, I have a hard time believing that. Do you think if he's at work and someone called him, you think he goes and tells his wife right away? Like, oh my God, they're investigating my tweets. Like, he's not going to go to his wife. He's at work. He's not going to tell her. Unless he knows that she's doing this, right? He's not just going to be like, I'm really scared right now. Hey, honey, this is what's going on at work. And then she gets the clue. And like, if he had that fear, then he knew something. And if he told her, he knew. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how exactly that information spread. I just know that like that sequence of events was by far the most damning thing in the entire article.
Yeah, it's just absolutely crazy. I cannot. Do you know, I am supposed to get up early in the morning every morning, and I try to go to bed around 10 or 11 o'clock because I'm old and I have to work early. I was this story broke and I could not. I was laying in bed refreshing my phone till like 1:30 in the morning, and I've been walking around like a zombie ever since because I can't sleep. It's the most incredible story. As a Sixers fan personally, like, I'm a big Sixers fan. I don't know if I told you this last time.
You did.
Yeah. It's really...
It has come up before.
It comes up all the time. I'm sorry. I apologize to you and everyone else I meet. It's really sad for me as a fan because, like, this is the worst possible time this could happen, right? Free agency is just about to happen. They're just about to go into the draft. And, like, even before we go into that, this has to be a fireable offense, right?
I would think so. And now it's really interesting because the Sixers put out the official Brett Brown contract extension press release today. And like, not only is Brian quoted in it, but Brett says in his quote how excited he is to continue working with Brian. Like, it almost seemed like intentional. Like, we are going to put this out there that Brian Colangelo is still the president of this team and that he's going to remain that way until our investigation is complete. Like, it seems like for now, at least, they're sticking by him. And look, we don't know what this investigation is going to find. We don't know if there's going to be incontrovertible proof one way or another. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I have a hard time believing that the sort of relationships that are damaged here are going to be easily repaired. It just felt like to me, like when I saw this stuff, I was like, all right, he's probably done. Like, yeah. unless they can really prove that he has been framed somehow. Or that his family has been framed, which I can't even comprehend how that would be possible.
Exactly. That would be the longest con of all time, right?
Right, because they would have had to been tweeting since, like, what, January of last year?
2016, I think.
Thought it was 2017, but okay, if it was 2016, since that's even crazier.
Since he got to Philadelphia, I think it was in 2016. I think it was, like, December of 2016, something like that. I'll go check my facts.
Whatever it is, like, if this was somebody setting him up, that's, like, completely bonkers.
Yeah.
But I just have a hard time believing that you can come back from this. Like, with what he said about Markel, or I shouldn't say what he said, with what the account said about Markel, with what the account said about Joel Embiid, and some of the stuff on the discus, if that is related to, like, some of those blog comments were even harsher.
Explain about, the discus about for me Embiid. Real quick. I don't know what that is.
That is a blog commenting system that allows you to, like, create an account, and then you can comment on various websites using that account.
So
there were basically comments on, like, the Sixers Sense and other sort of other Sixers blogs,
mm-hmm.
Under this one account, and many Sixers fans believe that it is the same person who was operating the burner accounts, and they were expressing very similar sentiments. Just some of them were even, like, just by nature of the medium, they could be much longer,
right?
And more in depth, and some of them did include inside information again. And then some of them were even, there were new targets in these. Like, some of them were, like, on Raptors stories criticizing Tim Leiwicki, who at one point was running Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, and who said after Colangelo was out there that, like, he didn't get along with him. So it, like, this goes pretty deep.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously. And so, yeah, I would be surprised if he remained in charge of the front office. But at the same time, I was surprised when I saw that press release today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, if it's not him directly, it's, like, one degree away. Right. So
that's the thing.
And I don't understand how the team could even come back. I mean, like, it's such a black mark on the organization. Like, I don't understand how, even if you love the guy, even if you think he's a great human being, and maybe he is, maybe he's just an easily triggered, really arrogant, wonderful person. I can relate. I'm Italian too. I'm ashamed of both of them as an Italian American, by the way. But, like, I forgot what my point was. I had it and I lost it. It doesn't even matter because I'm keeping all this in anyways.
Yeah. No, I think you were building toward just basically saying that they can't afford to keep him on.
Yeah, it just, like, what does that do to, like, Joel Embiid was really upset, clearly, when he made that joke tweet. But you knew he was, like, he wasn't happy about it.
He has gone back and faved more stuff.
Yeah.
Like, if you go through his likes from the past couple of days on Twitter, like, and he has been following along.
Instagram, and yeah, he's following everything. And he should be. Yeah. Like, if your general manager comes out and, like, he instantly caused a rift between, listen, even if Brian Colangelo didn't say it and he said it to his wife. His wife tweeted this stuff. It's still coming out of his mouth. And he's like causing a rift between the two best players on the team. He's losing the trust of everyone in that organization and any free agents that would possibly want to go there. Think about LeBron. If he leaves Cleveland in this offseason, which a lot of people think he will, and a lot of people had him pegged to go to the Sixers, what does this do to his mindset now? Because, like, you go to play with really great players, but you also go to play for a great organization, and you want to know that your general manager and your owner has your best interest. Honestly, the reason I think he's leaving Cleveland is because of Dan Gilbert, because he does not like Dan Gilbert. I honestly think that's why he's probably leaving Cleveland. Why would he jump out of that situation into another dysfunctional organization where your general manager is just tweeting crazy shit out, like divulging player information, well-kept secrets, medical information that breaks the law, all kinds of things. Like, why would you want to go there? It hurts their chances for free agency. And then if he's fired now, I mean, it's just such a mess.
I mean, you're a month out from the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how long this investigation is going to take, first of all. Who knows if, like, is ownership already thinking about replacements, or do they only do that depending on what happens here?
Right.
Like, this is a huge summer for the Sixers on a lot of levels. Like, we could, if none of this had happened, we could have a fascinating conversation about how big the summer is for Philly regardless.
Right.
Like just talking pure basketball and their cap situation and the free agents that they have and who they could be going after and potential trade targets and all of that stuff. Like there, I think if you're having the Kawhi Leonard discussion, you have to talk about Philly. I think if you're having the LeBron James discussion, you have to talk about Philly. I think the same is the case with Paul George, who might be the best fit of any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's particularly tricky because of where Philly is. Like, yeah, they can get cap space to go after those guys, but that assumes they're just letting everybody else walk when they have several key members of their team. Like, Ben Simmons doesn't look as good as he did last year without J.J. Redick on the team spacing the floor.
Right.
They don't go on that crazy second-half run without Marco Bellinelli and Arsene Ilyasova. All these guys are free agents. They'd have to move Jared Bayless, maybe attach a pick to him to get his $8 million off the books. Like, all of this stuff has to happen. Like, you need like a plan in place, and not just one plan. You need like multiple different scenarios mapped out, and you need to be able to act quickly at the beginning of July when all this stuff can be done. And like that's not even talking about draft strategy. Like, it is a really weird time to try to replace the person who leads your front office. And if they don't even know if they're doing that yet, that puts the organization as a whole in like a really, really weird position.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, it would be good for them to move really swiftly and like rip the Band-Aid off, because you've got a lot of moves to make in a very truncated amount of time now, right? Also, the longer you let this go on, the worse it looks for the franchise. Like, oh, so you're just tolerant of all these shenanigans that go on. Like, that's not a good look for the team at all.
And it's hard not to feel bad for like here's the thing. Like, I get like there is a sense within Sixers fandom that just doesn't give a shit about the sort of Colangelo regime.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But like, I know some people that work for the Sixers. Like, he has assembled like the biggest analytics staff in the league. He has made changes with regards to like the medical staff. They have this like beautiful new practice facility that has like a kitchen that was written about by Kevin Arnovitz for ESPN The Mag, that has like, it's basically like a fully operational like restaurant and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, Brett Brown has like enough developmental coaches that he's like basically the head coach of the team, but also sort of like in charge of like a wide ranging development program, which is basically his dream.
Right.
And that's sort of like, I wrote about that a little bit when I did a Brett Brown profile earlier this year. Like, they have so many good things going for them in terms of their organizational structure, in terms of their setup for the future. And a lot of people that had absolutely nothing to do with any of this drama are just like going in and working hard every day. And like, this just sucks for them. Like, it sucks for the players. It sucks for Brett, who should be just like celebrating this well-earned contract extension, because there aren't a lot of dudes who get to coach a team as terrible as the Sixers were and get to stay once they end up on the upswing and making the playoffs for the first time and all that. Like, he has had an incredible run.
Absolutely.
And this should just be a great time for the franchise, and everybody should be excited about the possibilities of the summer. And that's why, like, for you as a Sixers fan, but even like also just for the people who are actually doing the work every day, like, this is just, it's awkward, it's embarrassing, it's humiliating, it's like, it just sucks. Like, it just sucks on every level.
And if he gets fired, it's bound to take a few people with him. So you have to feel bad for those people as well that had nothing to do with this. They were just caught in the crossfire. I feel bad for all of those people. And yeah, it's just, it's a horrible embarrassment. But, you know, having said all that, at the same time, this franchise is like the most freaking interesting sports franchise.
Always.
Always. It's like, you know, there's always something to talk about. So that's great. I should just turn this into a Sixers podcast.
And I also, like, as I get really serious and I start saying how I feel bad to people, this is also hilarious.
Yeah.
We can't get past the fact that there are these tweets saying, like, no, that's a normal collar.
Yeah.
Like, it just,
what about the ladder and having to blank out the butt part? Why would you censor butt kicking at somebody?
No, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And that's what tipped off a lot of people to being like, this can't be someone who has English as their first language. Right. Like, why would you ever censor butt? Like, that's just so weird.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of stuff in here, man. Like, the calling Ujiri a trust fund baby.
Yeah, right.
Like, knowing that, like, his whole career, everybody has been like taking shots at BC, saying that he's only where he is because of his father. Like, that's something he's been running from the entire time, and trying to establish himself as his own person. Like, the fact that he would ever use that insult or someone near him would use that insult. Mm-hmm. I'm completely saying all the things that I'm not meaning to say. I don't even, honestly, like, just to be very clear, I don't think anymore that it was just him.
Right.
I think if it wasn't his wife, which a lot of signs are pointing there, then it was somebody else who was close to him. But I think there's enough stuff that has come out. For example, like some of these tweets happening in the middle of him addressing the media. Like, that's not really possible that he would be doing both at the same time. So I no longer think this was just him. Maybe he had knowledge of it. Maybe he was a part of it. I don't know. But I do want to be clear saying, like, I don't have all the information. I can't make the judgments yet. But in my estimation, this wasn't just Brian Colangelo maniacally tweeting for all this time.
Well, listen, I'm here for all your wild speculation, so just let it fly. it's true. Like, some of it doesn't add up, obviously. But the thing is, like, it could have been his wife doing that while he's
this. Yeah.
And the whole thing about being in Beijing for the Olympics and with Dwayne Wade. I don't think Gabrielle Union was there at the time, so that's kind of screwy too. There's a lot of I'm like, it goes really deep. There's so many things. Like, the more I scroll through Twitter, that, like, some, I think he had an account on Liberty Ballers, or she had an account on Liberty Ballers and were replying on there. Yeah, it's crazy. It's everywhere. He probably didn't do all of it. He couldn't have done all of it. But as from my recollection, I think we've basically accounted for four of the five Twitter accounts now. So what's the other one? Did he have like one burner account that he actually acknowledged, and then another one that was him? Or was it his son, or was it his father? Kind of, I don't know.
I think we've seen the tweets from the four that tweeted, and then the fifth one was just that Philo 1234567 that he admitted was him and that's never tweeted.
Okay, so maybe I'm just, yeah, okay. So then there's, yeah, wait,
some of the, like, a, they're like, there's only, the Eric Jr. one is the only one that is unlocked.
That's but the best name, by the way.
I know.
I don't know why I laugh at that every time.
Which if the discus thing is true, then, like, it might actually be better referred to as Eric Jr. because one of the names on discus, it was like Jacob Rubin. Anyway, this is all getting
right.
This is all getting convoluted, but
that's fine.
I don't even remember what the hell
it doesn't,
I was saying.
It doesn't matter.
It's all very weird. And I just think, yeah, like, if you want to go back and look at the tweets, there are ways. Like, for example, if you use the search engine Bing and you search for any of the account names, they just have like cached versions of those Twitter accounts that you can look at pretty easily.
So you can
from
see
before
all,
they were.
You can see all their tweets before they went private?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You can do that.
I know what I'm doing tonight. Oh man, James, I don't even know. Do you want to talk any more about this, or like, it's, you know,
I mean, no, go ahead.
No, there's so much. We could talk all night. We could just wildly speculate about everything all night. At some point, you just start, like, running in circles. But it's just so incredibly fascinating. And I don't know about you, but I am still waiting for the next piece of news to drop. I'm waiting for the next thing to happen. Like, oh, it's confirmed that two of these were his wives, or that one of these was his, or an additional one was his, or, like, some crazy thing to happen, or that he actually gets fired.
I wish, this is what I will say, I wish there was a version of this story that was harmless, because...
Oh, stop. If it's harmless...
Go ahead. Let me finish.
I'll give you my counter.
There is a world where there are all these crazy tweets being sent that defend Colangelo, that say that he's being misunderstood, that say people are being unfair, that basically defend his honor. And let's say it was his wife that was doing them. And they're all over the internet, and there's years of history of this. Mm-hmm. And it was only that. It was not, oh, like, hey, reporter, please ask Jahlil Okafor this. Right. Or, hey, like, Markel Fultz had a difficult childhood and is still getting over stuff. Or, like, any of this stuff that actually implicates, like, other people and gets into, like, private business and it can be harmful. Like, then you would find this out and just be like, oh, like, that's, in a way, like, that's just kind of sweet. Like, she's just, like,
yeah, she's
defending his honor online.
Exactly.
Anonymously. But, like, that's just, there's no world where that's all that's happening.
No. And I was going to say, the reason, I mean, yes, that would be a compelling story. It would be funny and it would be cute. And you're like, all right, that's fine. She really loves him. And, you know, she's.
It would also be a little weird, but
it'd be very weird. She's, you know, very passionate, as Italians often are.
Uh-huh.
That would be cute. But the thing that makes this story so compelling, obviously, is that, like, there's so much to be lost here. There's so much on the line, and it's just such a reckless thing to do. By the way, I don't know about you, but whenever I hear stuff like this, and I think a lot of people do this too, I immediately internalize it and, like, think, oh my God. I mean, I talked about it a little bit earlier, but, like, I actually want to go back through and see my tweets now. And, like, maybe I should take this down. Maybe I should take this down. Like,
I've thought of just wiping my whole Twitter account.
Right?
I've never actually done it. Yeah, I've wiped Facebook pretty much clear. But
I can tell you when back in the day when I was in undergrad, or actually I think I was in grad school, and I just found out about Facebook because I'm pretty old now.
I was an undergrad.
Yeah, I posted some things on there that I would never want anyone ever to see. I was a completely different human being now, you know, than I am now.
Yeah, me too. We all are. Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm just like, if anybody would read that stuff now, I would be mortified. I would probably lose my job. And it was nothing like racist or angry or mean towards people or anything like that. Just like really bad stories with, you know, other people. But like, like I'm leaving it right there. I was in a band, right? Mm-hmm. I would never want anybody to read that stuff. It would be mortifying. And to have somebody in such a high position like this, I'm not a Colangelo fan. I hated it when they pushed Hinkie out the door, and I hated it when they got Colangelo in here. I've been waiting for him to screw something up so badly, like making a horrible trade or signing somebody who's not very good to a really long contract and maxing out their cap space. Actually, in this way, if they do let him go now, I think the Sixers fans have gotten off easy, because that stupid thing he was going to do was ultimately coming down the pike. I'm certain of it. just saying.
I mean, the Fultz trade might turn out to be that. We don't know yet. Yeah,
exactly. And like, what did he trade 2 second-round picks for nothing and gave away like cap space? Anyway.
I will say it's interesting that, like, he came into that job, and I think a lot of our reaction, certainly my reaction, was this is like the most incredible situation an executive has ever stepped into. It is almost impossible to screw this up. Like, when you looked at the assets, when you looked at the cap space, when you looked at everything that Hinkie had done beforehand, it was just like, all right, like, you've got it made. And he went in, and they immediately had the number one pick. Joel Embiid came back, and it just looked like he was just given this gift of, like, you can make mistakes, and it probably won't matter. Like, you're just in too good a position. And now it's like, oh, well, like, it turns out you can screw it up.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody would have predicted it would be like this.
Right.
But there's a very real chance. I don't know if it's a better than 50-50 chance. I have no idea. But, like, there is a non-zero chance that he is not the president of the Sixers in a week, maybe even in a day.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it has nothing to do with his transaction history, but like,
that's the thing.
It really does feel like something has to come out of this.
Yeah. Seriously. Something has to happen. Like, they can't just brush this under the rug. And God, I'm here for all of it. I am going to be glued to Twitter for the next several days. Do you want to talk real quick about LiAngelo Ball working after the Lakers? Speaking of other incredible stories that mean nothing, but
that was a thing that happened. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that was also a thing. I found it funny that I saw like one quick headline that he worked out for them, and no one was excited about it. So that's all I needed to know.
I just liked the tweet that said like LiAngelo Ball of Vytautas worked out for the Lakers. Like, it's just like he's just any other prospect that had been playing overseas the year before.
Anyway, and Steve Clifford was hired by the Magic. Congratulations, Steve Clifford. Brett Brown got a contract extension. Congratulations, Brett Brown. I couldn't think of a coach more deserving. He's awesome and seems like a wonderful human being, genuinely.
He's the best.
Yeah. Other than that, James, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This has been really fun.
I hope it was cathartic for you, because it was for me a little bit at least.
Yeah, I mean, anytime I can just talk about a weird, unresolved tweeting scandal, I'm here for it.
Well, unfortunately, they don't happen all that often, but you know, anytime they do, I'm definitely going to call you and be like, come on,
please,
let's talk about it.
Please do.
Absolutely. James, plug your stuff one more time and I'll let you go.
Yeah, my writing's on cbssports.com in the NBA section. I might be writing a column about the game tonight. We'll see. We have a couple people there, and there's a bunch of us that, like, I don't know that the game will be interesting enough to deserve a lot of different angles, but if it is, then you can look forward to my game one column about the NBA Finals. I don't know.
I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully it'll be interesting. I follow your stuff, so obviously. And thank you also for, again, joining me for my 100th birthday, I mean episode.
Happy 100th birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to stop this thing now. James Herbert of CBS Sports, everyone. One of my new favorite people. Go check him out. And that's going to do it for me for this week. I'll talk to you guys soon.